souls mean?
Yeah. Change, death, ending.
Yeah.
In a way, what we've got here is the actual wheel of life is an early Buddhist image. And in later Buddhism, you get the interpolation of the Buddhas in the six realms, and you get the demon of impermanence from the outside, who are more tantric figures. So they've come in later on, to put it in a later context. Well, all I can do is repeat what I said earlier, in a way. I think this is a mystery, in a way. I mean, I was talking with Dyapakshini about this a couple of months ago, and we had this very lengthy telephone conversation about this mysterious way in which suffering and the relationship between dukkha and shraddha. I like this way that Kulananda puts it, is that when we experience dukkha, we've always got faith that we've got this idea that things could be better, that we could not have to experience dukkha. But sometimes that faith is in unhelpful things. It's misguided faith, as it were. And that just takes us back around the wheel again. And sometimes it's well-founded faith. It's this confidence in the Dharma. It's the confidence in the fact that things could be radically different, that we could transcend that cyclic experience, and that's what starts to take us in a more useful direction. And that's the term, that's the way in which Shraddha is normally apply.
Would it also be a kind of sense that even if it's not going all that well for you at that moment in time, that it's kind of like a trust that doesn't really matter, and it's kind of the overall picture's okay and fine, and so there's kind of acceptance and trust.
I don't know what I think about that. I'll have to get back to you about that one.
I'm not sure.
You're saying is whatever happens, happens for the best.
Yeah.
I certainly don't think that's not a traditional Buddhist approach. Not everything that happens happens for the best. Some things that happen in the world are clearly absolutely horrible. And
things are only in the moment anyway, and it's not permanent, then you can have faith in that. It's not that bad things happening at that point. It's only at that point. So, in a positive, optimistic way, you can, if you're down the bottom, then you can move around that spiral, or up that spiral.
There's something about this that I'm a bit uncomfortable about. It's kind of
isn't it more the way you relate to what's happening, and that you can change it in your own mind, so that it's if the object of the exercise is to avoid something that's painful is happening, you think about it in a different way, that give you if you are able to do something.
I suppose that's how I talk about it. It's that, like, whatever's happening, I have the possibility of responding in a creative way here. However good or bad my circumstances may be at any particular time, I've always got the possibility of responding creatively. And I think if one can come back to that, then I think that's a very fruitful thing. I think it's on the subjective level, as it were, rather than on the objective level, that things are as they are for a reason.
Yeah.
Things just are as they are. The universe is a complicated place, and trying to get your head around how they are as they are and why they are as they are. Um, can be a rather fruitless task.
No, I think that's pretty close to what I actually meant.
Ah,
that's
good.
Better way
to get it. Okay. Took me a while to get there. It's not the ideal metaphor in certain respects.
Not the ideal metaphor, I suppose the wall is
cultivating greater resourcefulness is.
I feel that I'm the wall and I'm getting stronger. It's more immense, not a brick wall, but
yeah. Sometimes I talk about having more tools in the toolkit, as it were. You know,
yeah.
More strategies for responding to different circumstances. Yeah, they're a bit unyielding, aren't they? They're a bit they're not the most responsive of metaphors. I think one of the things is that one doesn't think in those terms, even, as it were. To have knowledge and vision of things as they really are would mean that one would have no conception of oneself with regard to status at all. One would have just left that sort of stuff behind, so one would have let go of a tendency, actually perhaps not completely let go of a tendency to compare oneself with others or to ask oneself those questions, but kind of one wouldn't even think in those terms, in a way. I think it's generally speaking in Buddhism, it's considered to be a very unhelpful sign. If somebody says, "I have this particular attainment," it's usually considered to be a sign that they haven't. It's considered rather poor form, spiritually speaking, to claim a particular level of attainment. Yeah, it's one of the troubles of having kind of signposts, as it were, milestones, as it were, as people like to try and measure themselves against them. And whilst they have some usefulness in terms of marking out the path, people can get a bit hung up on them. And you know, is your teacher enlightened? Is your teacher a stream entrant? That sort of stuff. And in a way, the important question is, has your teacher able to support and inspire you to take whatever the next step for you is, really? And the same is true, you know, if one has achieved knowledge and vision of things as they really are, then how does one take the next step, whatever that might be?
It's a very sort of flexible thing as well. It's not that it seems to me anyway that you don't sort of build yourself up and sort of reach something. You can very much slip back down again. For example, one moment when you slip back down could be the moment you think, "I'm there." That could be the moment when you sort of do a little snake's allowance and back to the bottom. So I think it's a very flexible thing as well.
It's the way it often is in meditation, isn't it? It's that kind of, "Oh yes, I've got concentrated. This is nice, isn't it?" Clunk. Okay, it's getting a wee bit late. It's getting on for 10:20, and I get the impression that Paul is keen to be home before midnight.